Hey, this is Sam Stroop with Let's Get to Talking, and today I've got the privilege of being with Tim Taylor, our state representative for the 48th District, and a little bit of Randolph. And I'm really looking forward to this chat. I didn't know Tim until a couple weeks ago, and now I'll get to know him better. Is your family Cooper County?
So it is. Since my childhood of about 4 years of age, my parents, most of my family's from the Mexico, Missouri area.
Okay.
Both sets of grandparents and great-grandparents. And my mom and dad moved to Boonville around 1969 to 70 to go to work on jobs.
And, okay.
And the old adage that if you're about an hour away from the in-laws, they don't visit often, you know, it's a trip to go visit, so kept them from coming around too often, but just close enough that they could, you know, make the trip. So I spent most of my summers, my mom and dad were the first ones really to move out of the country and into town, so I spent my summers up there with my grandparents on both sides. It was good, but so this is my hometown, though.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of that part, or just a very vague memories of that time there. Mm-hmm. So,
and then you were raised right in town here in Boonville for a lot of years.
I was right out by Harley Park,
okay.
So I spent those time here. You know, spending time in Harley Park and playing baseball from midget league through Ben Johnson. Grew up with, and always dreaming though of how could I find a place to go fish. That was all the driving factor for us kids growing up, was trying to find places to fish.
Right. So, did you do the Missouri River any?
Some. Spent time along the Missouri River. If looking back, if my parents knew the amount of time I was spending around the river, they probably would have put a kibosh on. But, you know, in those days, we were, latchkey kids or whatever, you know, we had to be in by dark.
Oh, yeah.
And after that, you know.
Sure. So it was a lot of pond fishing.
Yep.
Well, when that's good, it's really good.
It is good. There's a, up the, of course, the Katy Trail, or the Katy Railroad ran through town, and north of town, south of town, there was a couple of ponds up the railroad tracks, and we would hike up that way and slip in and fish.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was good.
Now you told me you lived south of Speed, so did you build a house out there and buy some land or what?
No, we, Dawn and I, of course I have my wife Dawn, and then our son Carter, who's just now on, but when Dawn and I first got married, and our wedding gift was a we bought a house just over here on 8th Street. It's a historic home, Edwards home. But, you know, my whole life was spent with the dream of being able to move out of town and have my own place, you know. So after we bought that house and lived there a couple of years, we had the opportunity to buy a house, a very small house that was falling in just outside of Pilot Grove.
Okay.
So we kind of moved into the family neighborhood of those people, and I'm a remodeler by trade, so we saved the old house from falling in, and then we got an opportunity to buy some land adjacent to the farmer that we moved into, and we bought our first piece of ground there, and then as time went along, we were still looking for more acreage, and you know, I'd always had a dream of at least having 100 acres or more, and a pond right beside my house, so I could go fishing anytime I wanted. Some folks who, the Hartmans, who are actually Ann Hartman, was prominent in establishing Hartman Village, which is a senior living community here south of Boonville. They were looking for somebody to buy their farm and somebody who would keep it together and somebody who would appreciate it. It was Vern Hartman always said it was his, it's like a, not, I want to say senior moment, but it's you know, when a guy buys a sports car when he's 70, right? Yes. But anyway, that was his love and his passion, and we went and visited, and my son, who was 3 years old at the time, sang happy birthday to him, and it was having a birthday.
So, sealed the deal.
And so that sealed the deal, yeah. So Ann and Vern wanted us to buy that farm, and so we were able to sell the property we had, and it all worked out.
Good. You know,
so
Well, and did your son go to school in Bunston, or?
So he went to school at Zion Lutheran School,
gotcha.
Which is there in Lone Elm.
Right.
So yeah, he went through eighth grade there, and then after that, you know, we had to decide. We're in the Bunston School District, and we were looking to decide where he was going to go to high school. And Bunston was on an upswing; they had good people and good stuff. So we said, yeah, he's going to go to Bunston.
Cool.
So he finished out his high school years in Bunston. So
yeah,
loved those people.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, a close friend of mine teaches special ed.
Oh yeah.
So she kind of keeps me in Bunston. And she's really proud of her school down there. So, and what is your son doing now that he's 21?
Yeah, so Carter's going to, he has an affinity for wildlife and biology, so he's going to Missouri Valley in Marshall, studying biology, and he's going to finish up next year, minor in criminal justice. So he has a conservation agent,
sure.
or a game warden of some type.
And get paid to fish.
Yeah. Now listen. When I was a kid, Russell Bonin lives up north, Armstrong area.
I know Russell.
You know Russell?
Yeah.
Russell and I went to school together. We're in high school. We go to high school to the job fair, and Paul Wunderlich used to be the conservation agent, the game warden here in Cooper County. Russell and I go up to the table, and there's Paul Wunderlich, you know, curmudgeon-y Paul at the time. And we said, boy, we'd like to be conservation agents, and that's what we dream about doing. He goes, boys, do you like to hunt and fish? And we go, yeah, that's why we love it. And he goes, you don't want this job. So it changed our whole mindset.
Sure. You
know? Russell and I talk about that all the time.
No, Russell's just a mile and a half from me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I said to Carter, when he told me he'd like to do that job, and pursue that career, I said, Carter, you know my story, right? And he goes, yeah, Dad, but there's a difference between you and me. And I said, really? What's that? And he looked me in the eye and he said, I like to hunt and fish, but I'm not obsessed with it like you are. So I said, okay, you got it. So a lot more opportunities now, though, than back then.
Now, you were a fireman, was your occupation for a lot of years.
So it was.
And you retired from it how long ago?
I retired in 2019.
Okay.
20,
yeah.
You know, time's flying, but I think like 22 and a half years is what I did with them.
What do you miss about that?
I miss the people.
The camaraderie.
The camaraderie. It's a family.
Yeah.
You know, you live in that station.
Right.
You know, gosh, the crew I had, both those guys are from Ashland, Station 8 on the south side of Columbia I miss the people. Still keep in touch with a lot of them, but.
I'm getting ready to do an interview with Kyle Conroe, who works with Columbia. Maybe you all were working simultaneously for a while.
We were. Yep, I know Kyle.
So I'll save a lot of questions about Kyle.
Yeah.
Or Bubba.
Bubba.
Howard County is Bubba.
So it was a good career. I really enjoyed it. And I still go back and visit. Have a good rapport with the new chief that they got. Actually got to pass some legislation that he realized that there was a deficit in the reporting. And so I was able to get some language passed, time flies, but last year before, that cleaned that up. HIPAA requirements for fire reporting.
Right.
People, that personal information that we gathered was available to anybody who wanted to get it. So, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that helped for them to have a retired fireman down there.
I'm the only retired fireman in the building.
Yeah,
so a lot of retired highway patrol, law enforcement, but.
I don't know if Erman Call was for Columbia, was he?
Well, he had retired by the time that got there.
But. He was a very close friend of mine.
Awesome.
I felt bad he passed, but I wasn't surprised. He smoked like a, like a chimney. Poor guy. But I think he really enjoyed it.
He did,
Was there anything you did before joining the fireman's force?
Oh, sure. Again, I mentioned remodeling. I worked for, when I got out of high school, I always wanted to go into the military. My intent was to go into the military, get a college degree while I was there, you know, work and do that. And so when I got out of high school, a few years afterwards, I was waiting to get in the military. I went to work for a construction company in Columbia.
Okay.
Learned how to do everything from heavy equipment to trim degree. And then I went in the Air Force. and ended up, I had as a volunteer firefighter here in town. My dad was an assistant chief many, many decades, and I went into the military, open general, they call it. I didn't specify a job. I assumed with all my firefighting experience, they would be gullible. So they decided I wanted to be a cop. When I got done with that, I came back and I went to work with Kerry Brayman Remodeling in Columbia, still in business today. Worked for many years as a...
When did it hit you that you thought you might be in governance?
When or how? Yeah. When was about, you know, after I retired. Mm-hmm. If you put a how to it, it hit me like a brick. But when my mom and dad were motorcycle enthusiasts, they'd take a big bike, you know, and they'd take country. And on Saturdays, though, when the weather was nice, Dad would say, hey, let's go for a ride. So we'd get on the motorcycle, and inevitably, often we'd end up in the Capitol and walk around the, you know, we'd walk around the museum and walk around the halls. And so I always liked the Capitol. But I always wondered, always kind of stayed tuned to politics to a degree. And it, but really what it was opportunity and timing that happened. So I retired in 2019. Dave Munsell was termed out in 2020, the election year. And so retirement, the interest in what's happening in the Capitol and how things work. We could get to it later when we talk about committees if we do. But I always wondered how can there be so much divisiveness towards conservation and natural resources from my own party, from the Republicans. You know? So my desire was to get in there and see what that... So really just an opportunity, if you look, as I reflect and look back, you know, the retirement from the fire department, the opportunity to run.
Your dad dragging you into the Capitol building.
I would look at those portraits, or, you know, the composites with all the people and wonder, who's that old guy, or what did that old man do? Now I'm one of those people. You know, some little kid's going to look at me and say,
now, you kept Dave Munsell's secretary, didn't you?
I did, but let's not call her secretary, because much more than that.
I discovered that when I wanted to know something, I didn't necessarily have to talk to you. I could talk to your secretary, and she could tell me what I needed to know.
She's legislative assistant. Her name is June Cardwell, and I have said this from nearly the beginning. There are two spokes. If I'm the hub of the wheel, there are two spokes, and they're both women. One of them's June Cardwell at the Capitol, and the other one's my wife, who's on the other side of this wall. They keep me centered. But thankfully, I couldn't imagine a freshman going down there and have a freshman legislative assistant who really doesn't know. June has represented and spoken and helped the people of this district longer than any single representative
has. So almost, and you can tell talking to her,
16 years plus.
Amazing.
She's a good person.
Now, you served under which governors?
So I came in with Governor Parson.
Okay.
And then now Governor Kehoe.
So okay, so it's just two, right? Was the position anything like you imagined it?
If Dave, yes and no. If Dave Munsell had grabbed me, so we were sitting at I served on the Extension Council, Council here in the county. We were having our dinner, annual dinner one evening, and Dave and his wife were sitting across the table from us, and I said, David, who's going to take your place when you retire or when you term out? And he looked at me and said, why not you? And I don't. If he'd have grabbed me right then and pulled me in and smacked me a couple of three times, said, it's really hard work if you want to do it right, it may have altered my thought, but it is what I thought it is. It's more, actually.
And you were warned it's going to be a lot of work.
Yes. I mean, I like to work and I take it seriously. Right. So it is. So it's everything I thought it would be. I do hate politics in the sense of I hate politics within the politics.
Probably Dave Munsell, you might say, was your legislative hero, or were there others that you had your eye on and knew about and you learned, they mentored you?
Yeah, once I got, so when I, people asked me early on, and they still do, what was your first impression when I got there?
Yeah.
The first impression for me was the diversity of people who serve in the, as representatives. They're everyday people, just like me. There are plumbers, there are doctors, there are retired police officers, there are business owners, there are teachers, there the whole gamut of life is there in those 100 people. And they're all there for the same reason, for the most part, as I can gather, to try to serve the best they can and as best they can. So that's what impressed me the most. I had, at the time, the seating is all done by the speaker, who chooses, you know, your committees, chooses where you sit on the floor, chooses all these things. And I was fortunate to have been sat in the middle of a bunch of senior people who really had a great influence on me to start in the right path. All of those, and the list is long.
Yeah.
I did go into it very raw. I mean, I didn't have any political experience. I was the fair board president here in Cooper County for a couple of years, and I always say that that position prepared me to go to the Capitol more than any single thing.
Yeah. Now, is everyone on a committee, all of the representatives?
There would be some who aren't on committees, maybe by punishment or they did something not conducive.
I see.
Again, the speaker has all the authority about who serves on what and when. So, but generally, it can easily be that, for the most part, everybody has a committee in which they serve.
What committees did you start out with?
Interesting enough, I knew you might ask that question. I think you alluded to it, and I had to sit down and start thinking about that because I haven't really...
their past history.
Yeah, I mean, 6 years and so much has happened in those short 6 years, but I did write them down. So the first, in 21 and 22, I was on the Conservation Natural Resources Committee, which is my turmoil. Public safety, obviously. Mm-hmm. Transportation. The number one issue that we had, and it's not the number one anymore, but in this district that I heard from the most was our roads. They were awful. We have made great strides. But I wanted to be on transportation because that's what I felt like I could bring to my district, to our district, is any kind of help in that realm. And then I served on veterans because those were the first 2 years.
And now you're... committees that you served on are a lot different, aren't they?
They are.
I think I remember from when you were up at Strawberry.
Yeah, said early on, and you'll have to stop because we could talk about this particular topic for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But the John Patterson, the speaker, the current speaker, asked me to chair an interim committee through the summer. An interim committee has no power. An interim committee just got legislation because it's in between sessions.
Right.
So a year ago, this month, I put together Speaker, I said, I'm not an expert in taxes, but I will lead this group and be happy to do that. So I said, but you have to establish a good, hardworking group of people who are willing to act. So 19 other people, including myself, on this special interim committee on property tax reform. Mm-hmm. My desire was to not just have meetings in Jefferson City. I wanted to take it on the road, which doesn't happen too often, and almost never to the degree that I set up and that I did.
Right.
I ended up having, I think, 6 meetings. But I wanted to get them out into the areas where the rural counties can come, because property tax is a local tax. Almost just a small percentage of the tax that's collected goes to the state, and that's the budget fund, which in the big picture is just a little minuscule grand. So I wanted to get those meetings out so that the rural people could come. And so I went to Lebanon, I took it to Macon, sitting St. Louis, Clayton, and in St. Louis, but right downtown pretty much. And then we had 2 on starting in Jefferson City and then ending in Jefferson City.
How many of you would go to those local meetings? Not all 20.
Well, nearly. Yeah,
really?
There were always a couple who couldn't make it,
sure.
But it was quite, and it was a full-fledged meeting. So we had house security, house sound system, house, in June was just, and other LAs helped her, you know, to get it all set up. It was quite the task.
How long were the meetings?
Well, see, this is what I was talking about. And They were extremely long. I think all told, we ended up having like 26 hours of public testimony.
Yeah.
But it was important.
Yeah.
We had to open that up so people could, one, voice their frustration. But when I started off, I said, look, we know the complaints. We're familiar with the complaints. What we want is complaints, but we want ideas on how to make it better. Okay, mm-hmm. That was imperative that we did that. And I think we did. I got a lot of compliments. That I was the right person to do that. I didn't come in with an agenda either way. I just tried to steer the ship so that we could gather this information and find out what's possible and what change. My stated goal in the very beginning, that I'm not looking to, and still won't if I'm still involved, I'm not looking at eliminating personal property tax. I'm not looking at cutting personal property tax. I'm looking at stabilizing property tax, trying to figure out a way to stop the taxpayers from bleeding so much. Goes back to my medical training, you know, the first assessment, well, you're gonna stop the bleeding. So I just wanna stop the bleeding. And I think there's some simple ways. Number, the tax system and tax codes is not simple. It's the most complicated thing I've ever, and will be the most difficult thing I ever take on. So, but anyway, long process, and you know, there's ideas, and I didn't, you know, some of the committee members were like, oh, we gotta go through this again, but it was important for me to let people talk. I did have to trim time down, but it could have.
Did you feel like each place you went, you heard the same things, or was there extreme variety between city and rural? And
yeah, so we did hear the same things, but they're in this. To take it to the rural, I wanted to take it to the rural areas because I wanted those who aren't from the rural areas to understanding what property tax is for us out here in the rural areas and how much, I mean, it's everything for us, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have a huge business base or manufacturing base. And by the same token, I wanted my rural legislators who were on the committee to go into the urban areas so they could get an understanding played out in the urban areas. So. There was, similarities, but differences still. Okay. You know, in the rural areas, it was all similar. In the urban areas, you know, the top. All told, though, if combined together, it all still came down to the taxpayers are getting pinched because of, you know, and it all is landing on home ownership and the ones that are getting they're getting the worst of it. So the homeowners are, so. We heard from all, but you know, Kansas City's got their own issues, and that's been in the news for years now about can we be an elevated 200% in some cases, or greater than 200%. It's fascinating, and I literally, for a year, I literally would wake up at 2:30 in the morning
Well, before I knew we were to be talking about property tax, so I wanted to talk to Arthur Woody McCutcheon, and he and I go back. I have never complained about the county, and there may be a few people that do. And so, and it kind of sounded like from him, I don't know what all this talk is about. I don't know that there's an issue anywhere. And I thought, well, I'm sure hearing a lot of noise to the contrary. And so let's say you've got an urban area where the value of the houses have doubled. Then are the assessors doubling the property tax there? Because I got the impression from Woody that he doesn't double things up.
So the State Tax Commission dictates that, I mean, their job is to ensure that taxes are fair and assessed. I want to change the State Tax Commission to the State Assessment Commission, because they really don't have anything to do with taxes other than value and property tax. That's their sole job. Mm-hmm. Their goals, and by decree, they have to make sure that assessed values of homes and stuff are within the range of 90 to 110%. So again, it's just the 110 is a it's an ability that if they accidentally went over on an assessment, an assessor did, that the BOA could, mm-hmm. you know, somebody could say, hey, wait, you've over-assessed me, and there would be a window there they could work in because they're shooting for 100%. So if the counties are assessing below what that is, the state tax commission is going and saying, hey, you need to raise your by 15%.
Mm. Yeah.
And so the assessors are doing that. However, the protections that Hancock are supposed to give homeowners, because all of the commercial, the residential, the stuff, because they all are put into one group, that rise in residential is being watered down by the other, and so Hancock doesn't kick in. So you're seeing that 15% is staying intact and not getting rolled back to that 3.5% or 5%, whichever is less, which Hancock dictates. So that's the biggest thing that I'm trying to fix, is that if all of those silos, we call it siloing, if each one of them, if there's a huge spike in residential, it in itself will cause Hancock provision and it will roll back so that the homeowners won't get hit with anything greater than 3.5% or 5%. And it's not put together and one does down the other. If commercial value skyrockets, and it'll in itself will roll back. So the assessors, one of the biggest things I've learned, the assessors have a huge job, and there's not a lot. A lot of it is just experience that the assessor has over the years to figure out how to work the system. But we have a lot of turnover in assessors around the state. If you take Darren up in Sheridan County, he's been to speak with him often. He's really ideas and stuff because he has that experience. Roger Reedy, who served as a representative, Roger Reedy, for decades and decades. He was my vice. So it's different in every county. The state tax commission does what they need, and most counties, or many counties, are woefully behind. You see, that's why you have the call by some legislators to put a cap on that, you know. But the problem with that is if you cap it, then Hancock doesn't get kicked in, so there's no, you stymie that, so the homeowners, the property owners, won't get any relief with a cap. I mean, sure, they would get that relief, but they could get more relief if you didn't cap it and it went up, it would roll back.
I see why you probably are still waking up at 2:00.
Complicated.
Yeah.
It really is complicated.
Now, you passed a bill 2780, was that it?
2780.
Did that do anything?
So it got 133 votes out of 163. Now, I understand we have several vacancies, so you know, 133 people, Democrat and Republican, sent it to the Senate, and early, before spring break. And the Senate chair of that committee opted to not do anything. But they did decide they wanted to do something the last week of session. So they sent me a bill, stomach and couldn't live with. For one thing, it had this huge part of it that we on the House had never seen that idea.
Okay. Yeah.
So in the last week, I would have to come in, and I'm not going to send that to the Speaker, to the floor leader, and say this is something we should. So anyway, the timing of it, I would have to take that portion off, and then I'd have to spend all this time working on that, when inevitably they had on their side a bill that got 133 votes in the House. They could have taken that up and worked with it. In the interim, in between that last week and the week before spring break, I had a bill come through my committee that had a portion of that which I had in my original bill. The senator sent it over, and I doctored it up, and I added some good session, put it through. We voted on it on the House. Here's an opportunity. Now, that bill went to conference, which means, you know, we won't exceed our differences, right? So it went to conference and it got six signatures, the representatives and then two senators signed it, so that kept it from getting passed. But they had it sitting over there.
So it has not passed them.
Nothing's
because
passed.
Of problems.
So
the
last
two,
the very last night, the night before the last day of session, I was in the Senate and compromised, but they wouldn't. They just, though the Senate made it a priority, both sides of us this year, I contend that the Senate didn't take it nearly as serious as the House. Now, having said that, there was a lot of stuff on the Senate's plate this year with Amendment 5.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, the governor wanted several things. He wanted Amendment 5, he wanted property tax reform.
Yeah.
But sometimes you ball too much stuff up all at one time, and I don't think there wasn't an appetite.
Right.
We'll take it up again this year. And what degree I play in that process is, so.
Repeat that for me.
What role I have to play in the next two years has yet to be determined. We'll get a new speaker, you see. Though he has said, Alex Riley has said that it's still going to be a priority for him. What role I play?
I've got a feeling he'll still be in your lap.
Yeah, I think so. Because you know why? Because somebody's going to get asked, hey, would you like to go there and go, heck no, I'm not doing that. Because they've seen me. You know, the last day of session, I made the announcement, you know, special announcement to the body. I said, look, I hate to tell you this, but you know, it all died last night.
Yeah.
And I told him, I'm just tired.
Before I go into Prop 5, I wanted to ask you a little bit about budgeting. Because that's probably the biggest thing you all do is get the budget every year.
It's the only thing we're required to do.
Right.
Constitution is the only thing we're required to do.
Yeah. So. And so is there an actual budget committee?
There is. I serve on it. Yeah.
And
started on that committee. When I got there the first couple of years, I was like, that's how you learn about how things work is to be on the budget committee, because you see everything. How much you pay attention to, it's up to you. But first 2 years I didn't, and I regretted not being on budget, because it's a kickstart to get you on the road to understanding. So my next 2 years I asked to be on it and have served on it since.
So the way we come up with county budgets is we look at last year, and then we listen to everybody about what they want, and then we look at what we think is going to be coming in.
Projections.
And then we make decisions of who gets what they want and is it important. And is that kind of the same thing with the state?
It's exactly the same.
Okay.
The only, I think in your description, the only difference is that the governor puts out the governor's proposal. Yeah, so we kind of,
we work together on that.
Yeah, we know what we had last year, and we saw how that worked, and we oftentimes will do a left off, but the governor's recommendations comes, and so the committee itself is broken down into subcommittees. You have education and all those things, just groups.
Transportation.
Each subgroup, each subcommittee then had it down, but in essence, we get, and of course, it all starts in the House. So the governor, we look at the governor's recommendations, we know what has been happening this past year, the projections of what may happen in the future, and then we hear each individual department comes to us with their recommendations and what they generally do. They've already been working with the governor's office together, so they'll say, yeah, we'll take the governor's recommendation, and then here are the other things we'd like to ask for.
Sure.
Or we want an increase from the governor. So then we have to look at lots of talking back and forth, understanding about what are you going to do with this, and it's our opportunity then to speak directly with the department heads for each department and things, and it's always something, you know, why did you do this, or why, you know, why. Of course, each individual representative has their particular line. You know, Representative Don Mayhew for all these years has been hard on MoDOT. You know, why are you doing it this way? Anyway, when it's all said and done, we put our numbers together, we put it out there, and then we vote on it, and then we send it to the Senate. The Senate does the same thing. And now they've been in tune, and they're watching those people. It's really a wide net of people who are, so those people are watching our people and what we're, and they go through that same process. Then they change it, they increase it, they'll often cut it. Well, they will cut some stuff, but they, in the past, it's always been the Senate. We're a little more conservative in the fiscal side of things. We send it to the Senate, they bump it up, and you know, it's usually bigger.
Sure. Then there's fewer of them to argue about it, so they.
So then we go to conference, you know, we fail to exceed the difference, so we go to conference, and then we hash it out, and then we send it to the governor. And then the governor, you know, we both sides vote on it. Then the governor and
line item veto,
right? And which is the only thing that the governor can line item is the budget. Mm-hmm. Every other piece of legislation.
He has to do it.
Yeah. Right. Yep. And I, you know, the radio station Columbia sent me a note saying, can you give us a couple of lines mm-hmm. on your thoughts about the, you know, I simply sent back and said, look, I don't envy the governor.
Yeah.
At times like this, when hard decisions have to be made,
yeah.
And I'm sure, and I know, as I know the man personally, that
he lost a little sleep too.
Yeah, exactly. It's not easy to do.
Yeah. And the process started in January and it went right through May. And
yeah.
I would have said, guys, I'm out of here. Hats off to you.
Yeah. It's a challenge. So.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, obviously you can look back at history. The budget is used to put pressure in places too, you know. Looking, you know, we know if you look back at this and if you remember, there was a lot of the House's budget was rearranging how we fund higher education in the state,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Now, we pretty much knew that wasn't going to stand as written, right? But there is an understanding is that things are going to be different in the coming. The way it's operating now is
not going to work.
It's just not. It's not physically responsible mm-hmm. to keep doing it the way it is. So it's like boom, kick it out there. All right, you all, we're serious. In the next few years, we're going to have to figure out a better way. So, and the budget, you know, the budget cuts. The shortfalls are that Missouri is just barely staying on here. We've got to inject stimulus that'll make our economy grow, you see. So I think that this might help, but we've got to increase growth in the state. And for Republicans, we feel like that's the growth is more important than the taxing. Bring in the growth and that will bring the money that's needed instead of taxing more. Unrelated to five, I'm just saying that as a general rule, we believe is the ticket to, mm-hmm.
The only things I heard, it can't be just he went and said, Coyote Hill, you're getting lots of money. That must be a larger group of system that is getting some funding than just Coyote.
Yeah, yeah, there was, I think I alluded to in my little two lines that I said, I know these programs, not in depth, but I've been lobbied by all these groups, you know,
sure.
I understand how good of things they do. So having empathy for the governor having to cut funds from them, do that. But we are mandated, there are certain things that we have to fund, okay? We have to. Medicaid, there's a whole long list of, and it takes up 70% of our budget, those things that are mandated that we have to fund. So,
big part.
Or social services, the social services are a little bigger than schools. Mm. So, having said that.
Okay, that was very helpful to hear how the budgeting process, and there's probably a few things you left out, but I think you covered a lot, and I think the people who are not asleep listening to the radio will feel like they were definitely learned some things.
Yeah.
We may go longer if it's all right with you.
And I have all
the
afternoon.
We may divide this up into a couple of sessions. I started out with a guy once and it ended up being 7 hours.
So, listen, after
and
a summer full of discussing property taxes around the state, this is it'll be a drop in the bucket. So.
Yeah. Well, our newspaper was in Fayette was selected to full stuff on the proposed amendments. A quarter of it.
Yeah, it's change is daunting. So
yeah. I would say I have two questions and mm-hmm. just two, but you probably could go on for quite a while. Who's in favor of this? Why?
Okay.
I think you probably can answer pretty
I think
easily.
I can. Those are, so I would tell you, and many people, though I'm learning more and more about it myself, back to the property tax thing, I was so heavily involved in that, was wrapped around that particular line. And so as this was being crafted and stuff, though I paid attention, I didn't delve into it. So But I have caught up a lot. So who's in favor of it? So those who, obviously, those who have been touting and wanting to move away from a regressive tax to a consumption tax are going to be the ones who are in favor of that. I personally have always been in favor of tax. So those are the people who are going to be supportive. I want, as my 21-year-old son graduates from college, the workforce, although he's been working in this particular building since he was three, but as he moves off on his own, I want him to earn all the money, to keep as much money as he makes, and to not be penalized for working harder and making more money. I want him to get all of his money, and then he has the opportunity to decide where his money's going to go, knowing that that tax is there. He can, amongst varying forms of, if he's going to buy something, he can, right, one, two, three, or four. You know, this one costs the lowest, this one costs the most. This is what the... Those are, you know, those are going to be, and help me with the second part of your question.
From was who wants it, and you might say stilted income tax.
No, well, I don't want to...
No, please correct.
No, I don't want to insinuate that, yeah. So we all pay that income tax. I want everybody who works to get all the money that they want. I don't want the state taking any of their money.
So that
in that
get
form,
rid of the income tax.
In that form, right. It's people don't see that. Yeah. I don't know that very many people could tell me how much money they sent to the government, right?
You know, so, now that we have everybody else doing our taxes for us,
right,
I have no idea what my state tax is.
That's right. You're liable to know what you got back from
it. Yeah, I know what I get back.
But you won't know what you paid into it. So I say that people should keep that money and they decide what they get instead of. Now, having said that, obviously we have to make up that revenue somewhere, right? We can't just cut it and, you know. So, but putting that out for people to see, not only Missouri citizens, but all the people who travel through this to inject that money into our system. All those millions of people that come, it is millions who come through this, they don't pay into that tax burden. So
I'll throw a little more, maybe it'll come back. But okay, so switching to consumption tax and letting the state deal with sales tax increase, more revenue than out of a little bit of property tax for the state. I lost my thought. The income tax.
Okay.
So they must be wanting to make the switch to get more revenue in?
Nope, not exactly. No, I absolutely know that's not the case.
Okay.
The case, and it's specifically written in the legislation, this is a one-for-one trade. One-for-one. There is no, we're doing this to make more money.
Okay.
We're doing this to make exactly the same money from way.
Right.
It is specifically designed in the legislation on trade. So once
that's offset, the stuff I didn't understand when I was reading that.
Once the offset, if there's a tax here, we can go along. We can get really down in the weeds in this. Currently, try to remember to bring me back to this, okay? Missouri sits in the middle of all the states around us, and we have the lowest income tax, or excuse me, the lowest sales tax for all the states. The closest one to us next is Oklahoma, and they're a few percentages, tenths higher than us. There is a window of opportunity. We're at 4.2, let's say.
I think that's right.
The average around us is in the 6.5, okay, average. Some are higher, some are in the 7s. So we have a window of opportunity there to increase our sales tax, but not high enough that we're going to be above our neighbors, because we don't want to drive people out of Missouri shop in our neighboring states. So once that 2 cents, we'll look and see. And so that 2 cents, whatever that revenue generates, is going to offset the income tax. So that's going to knock the income. And then at that point, we have to look. Others, and this is what has a lot of people in, that we didn't define exactly what's going to be taxed services wise.
Right.
And I appreciate that. I understand that.
Or agricultural inputs.
So the governor has said, he mentioned that, the governor's tax homes. He did say ag, to what degree of what he was other prescriptions, I think medical stuff. There are certain things that are off the table. what we're going to be looking at. And as we develop that, we can't, gosh, complicated. If we were to define that in legislation,
right,
people are going to vote on it. It puts that in the Constitution, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that plan looks like, it puts it in the Constitution. And we don't want stuff in the Constitution without another vote, right? The complication level is great. So we need to develop that plan within statute so that it can be made better as the years go along. If it were in statute or in the Constitution, we wouldn't be able to do that. So to get it passed, and assuming that that 2 cents is going to be put in, we need to look and see what the remainder is, you see. Anything that we develop in the future is going to offset that. And so as we're chipping away at that income tax, once we hit zero, the income tax goes away, and all of those developed, whatever that looks like, those all cease as well. Now, the taxes that we did to implement it stay, but any new we don't have that ability to do it anymore. It's done. We have 5 years to do that. So people ask, well, what are you going to tax? And I can only speak for Tim Taylor. In my mind, I'm looking at those. Again, our tax system was developed, I think, in 1938. It hasn't been updated since then. And how much has changed since 1938? When you and I were kids, just one example, you and I were kids, we'd go down to the store with records and we'd buy our music. We'd buy our albums and stuff. And you paid a little tax on that, right? Right now, we're all streaming stuff. Nobody's buying locally. It's all streaming. For me, I want to look at those things that are outside, that are not being taxed, that perhaps you, or the new things, you know, that there's a whole host of things out there can tax. And then for me, I'm going to be looking at for things that are luxury, considered kind of luxury things that the poor people aren't paying, you know, like. And again, don't hold me to this. I'm just using design, interior design, I don't know, all those things that people have the ability to pay for stuff, you know. But that's just one idea.
Well, I tell you, what's going around the grapevine engaged to, a gal who runs her cattle on me, I don't know, all of a sudden, she's explaining to me all these amendments, and I just dropped my jaw. Is everybody's engaged as this? And driving. But that's what's going on out there.
That's what's being said. Yeah. But they say that because they have no, and they say that with no basis whatsoever of saying that. They're simply saying that to rile people up, because it's specifically stated in there that it's the when the income tax is eliminated, each dollar for dollar is done, and once that's done, it's done.
Well, how will this solve what you see as a stagnant era?
Yeah, so that's gonna,
if there's no change in the amount of revenue.
Other states around us, use Tennessee, Arkansas is moving towards this also. They're getting an influx of population that's double-digit increase population. Those are the states that don't have an income tax. Now, they have other things, too, that Missouri, you know, I think some of them have an ocean, right? So, but it's just one more thing to incentivize businesses to come. Dawn, we're sitting in my bakery, and the listeners won't know that, but my wife had a couple who came in here from Colorado or someplace, you know, that's they're moving there for that reason. I think there's like 42,000 people or something in that neighborhood since January have moved to Tennessee. It's just one way that we see is going to inject. But more importantly than that, because we're working and we're staying kind of just above board, the consumption tax is going to bring in a whole host of things that people aren't, you know, all those people that are traveling through Missouri, for one, is going up through that. But there's a whole host of things that aren't.
I see.
People who are working for cash, people who are, you know, the illicit drug dealers, and you think that's not the case, but they're all moving money around and it's not falling into the tax system. But a consumption tax, they're still going to buy stuff. Everybody's still going to buy stuff, so that's going
to... So am I hearing right? You see it as being just equalizing us with the other. Oh, Missouri's still got an income tax, so maybe I ought to look at a state that doesn't, when in fact we'd still be getting money out of their pockets. Be that scary income tax.
Again, as I said earlier, it's a tax that's on the surface, and they see it, and they know what they're buying, their money's going, and they have the choice of their money. If somebody lives month to month, you know, on paycheck to paycheck and making installment plan, that, that money, you know, I think I read recently it's like $3,000 a year. So to the point that you mentioned about other, the other states are moving in that direction, and if we don't try to move in that life, we, many of us, fear that we're them.
Now, what about, I'm in a, I'm on the, they are always very, all hell broke loose. And their concern was, if we changed how property tax is, I think I read that nothing will happen property tax wise, but then if we change property tax, what's the plan for the Armstrong Road, the Armstrong Fire? If we change property tax funding.
So I'm going to, this is where I mentioned earlier, I'm going to tell you that I am uncertain about that. I have not, and I will, I have not wrapped my mind or delved, again, because I was working on property tax, separate of this particular legislation. So I'm going to just be and say, I can't really answer that question at this point.
And that was the thing they kept pointing out. There is no plan, but there won't be a plan.
That's right. Look, we're not, my wife says it often to people, we're citizens too. We're not looking to make things worse. We're trying to keep things, if not the same, but better. So when that plan is designed, now I'm speaking for Tim Taylor, who's got, if the people will have me, I have two more, and that window of opportunity is 5 years out. So there'll be somebody after me.
Have to solve the problem.
But as to the point though, that as people are running for my space afterwards, the citizens need to be asking,
potential, what's the plan?
What's your idea for the potential candidate? What's your idea, and how do you feel about this? So we're not, as the property tax thing, as I was working through it and kind of to segue off of what you were mentioning, property tax, for me, I don't want anybody to lose money. I'm not looking to cut anybody. I want to stabilize it so everybody's getting what they're getting, but then there's not that wild, windfall, right? The windfalls are affecting the taxpayers, right? People, the entities, the taxing entities should be getting what they're getting and maintain and know there's some growth and all that, but it can't, the windfalls are really affecting the taxpayers a lot. There has to be a compromise in there somewhere.
This probably isn't justified. I've been impressed they've made, and I'm not, well, for instance, that kept a bunch of hogs. We are becoming a bedroom. People are, they want to get out of the gun alley. Yes.
Did you check? Are they all coming from North Columbia by chance?
And so we knew that every session they were trying to make it to us to keep hog barns out. So we went ahead and we did an ordinance with the understanding that we're going to let you vote on. The misinformation was just, but we still got 50. Again, I like to see more local. Now, please refute why it's a good idea.
So, again, Jeff City's making the decision. Yeah, the 4.2% are doing that. So,
and upping it some.
So again, we're just swapping the state's state about the income tax. We're just tax. This is not, and granted that it's not going to preclude any county or locality from, if you want to increase your school funding or whatever, to vote in and whatever. I mean, all of that is still viable after the fact, still available. And again, once the income tax is zeroed and then done away with, the states play in anything future local vote.
I think you've done a real good job with it. What else passed this last year down there significant?
Oh, well, we've got, you know, the Amendment 4 is going to mm-hmm. be on there that has to deal with initiative petition. That's the other one that's making, I'd say it's being a little bit overshadowed by. That's the, you know, saying that if you look at the last big things that have been added to the Constitution, they've been added by a simple majority, but it's been that from the urban areas that has carried that. And many of us, myself included, think that the Constitution is more sacred than that. I go back to years and years ago, I thought to myself at the time, why do we have bingo? I mean, so anyway, what Amendment 4 does is it's an avenue to say, listen, you can still get a simple majority. It just has to be a simple majority represented across. It's split up into congressional districts, and each congressional district would get 50 plus one. And if all of the people spread across the state say something needs to be in the Constitution, now people say, well, look, one district can dictate whether something or not, and I'm okay with that. I say that's the way it should be. If the Constitution is going to be in the Constitution, it should be that firm that all of the state agrees that. And if that one particular thing fails, then perhaps we need to look at doing that instead. 4 also says, look, you can't, foreign, but outside money can't be spent to change our Constitution. Mm-hmm. That money has to come from within. So we've got a lot of inflow, millions and millions of dollars that have been sunk into the state. One has to just do their soul searching within it, on both of these things, really, You just search within yourself and feel and understand how you want to vote and what your...
I have always been a staunch supporter of the first Constitutional Amendment creation. Always have.
Yeah.
And then the other day I woke up and I thought, damn, when are they going to get rid of so damn many deer in this state? Maybe I won't vote for it this time. I'm tired of my wife totaling cars.
Now remember, this is important. You have to understand. Now listen, Amendment 1 is not about the Conservation Department.
Okay? It's not just that.
It's not
soil
about that.
It's
our soil water districts in each of our counties. Yep. It's that Missouri has the best state parks in all of the
world. Oh, yeah. No, it's wonderful.
And they're free. Uh-huh. And my son, Carter, is actually got an internship with Conservation Federation of Missouri right now. And he's riding the trail and interviewing people and talking about that. And I think he told me the number that if you split that out, it costs every individual $5 a year to go to any state park in this country or in this state that you want for free. So Amendment 1 has nothing to do with the Missouri Department of it has to do with our soil and water conservation and state. So it is always
my son reminded me, Dad, don't worry, screwworm's going to take care of half the deer population.
And
it may.
Listen, we're inundated with deer. And for my family, although we raise cattle for years, we do fatten a pig every once in a while because you can't get bacon off anything except a pig, really. But we consume wild game. That's what my wife hasn't been in a meat department for 30 years.
Yeah.
So we eat as many as we can, and there's still.
I told my wife, I think we can live off rabbit this winter. Yeah. They have really multiplied.
Yeah. Better get them early before the coyotes and the owls and stuff get them.
Right. Anything else to see of that was pretty significant this last session?
You know,
there's a lot of noise, but we
passed, I had the numbers and I'll just have to go off memory, so they won't be exactly right, but I think we had the most productive, if you want to measure it by number of bills passed, we in the House started hard, fast, and early. We got the Senate a whole bunch of stuff so that the end of session, but they were able to get that stuff, and we had 100 pieces of legislation passed this year. Now most of that, almost all of that, is stuff you won't ever see in the news. You know, it's cleanup language, and you know, I had 3 things that I got passed this year, but again, they won't make the news.
Yeah, it's fixing things that hadn't been fixed, and they aren't big splashy news.
So, one of the pieces of legislation, and this was true last year also, stuff that had been in the queue for 7 years, never been passed, worked on every year for 7 years, that we finally last year started that ball rolling to get this good stuff that really doesn't affect or doesn't make the news again, but it affects everybody and everyday
people. It says been in queue?
Well, it's just been brought up every year.
I see.
Every year, the same thing. And you get it just to the edge, and then it just dies.
Yeah.
So this year, we were in, last year, and then again this year, we were able to get a lot of stuff that was really just nuts and bolts stuff.
I kind of noticed that it was consistently things were happening, not big, flashy, but.
And two, you might have noticed the last couple of years, there hasn't been this, the Senate has actually worked and stayed together.
Hmm.
Infighting, though it's still there, but it's not balled up.
Yeah.
It's not gummed up the work. Not as many filibusters and things. So.
It sounds like maybe you don't want to step up to the Senate.
Oh, I will not. People ask me all the time, what are you going to do next? And honestly, I just look from today until tomorrow. That's about as far ahead. I won't ever burn the bridges and say I won't do something, but people ask me, and my wife looks at him and says, you know, they go crazy when they go to the Senate. I don't think I want him to go crazy or get crazy. You know?
Right.
So I'm not actively seeking. It's not.
Yeah.
I've never done this with just to serve and do the best I can. So what doors open, what opportunities exist. So.
President Johnson. Was he a representative and then him a senator?
I can't answer that.
The guy asked him, so what's the difference? And he said, well, it's kind of a salad sandwich crap. And the House was like being in the chicken crap.
You know, the Senate, each individual Senate, we can pass anything we want as a Republican supermajority. Mm-hmm. We can pass anything we want out of the House. But each senator, there's only 34 of them. Each one individually has a tremendous amount of power.
Yeah.
They can, again, with a filibuster, they can stop anything they want to stop. So there's a requirement then, if you're going to get something done on the Senate, it requires that back and forth and a compromise.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to, and as it happened with the property tax reform this year, one just has to look at what amount of compromise you're with. It's something you can live with. And at a certain point, it gets to a stage where you can't live with it, I personally. But it is a requirement that you do that. They can steamroll stuff through the Senate.
What is the term limit on senators?
Same, 8 years.
8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But they do 4 year terms.
Oh, so
they only
have
to run twice.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
So, and I tell you, I don't know if you had that on your list, but I'm a proponent of term limits, but it didn't take me very long to realize that what we have in Missouri is not to allowing your representative to continue to represent you.
Right.
It leaves the bureaucrats with all the institutional knowledge. So it would be my hope that after I'm gone, that we find some way to make that available where someone can continue to serve a little longer.
Right.
Maybe, so you can do right now 8 years in the House, 8 years in the Senate, that's 16 years. If we could maybe open that up where one individual can only do 16 years and then just a lot, because I'm telling you.
I hear that all the time.
People know Tim Taylor's going to be in his senior year
if
reelected, and they whatever. You get a bunch of new, we're getting 30, perhaps, somewhere in that neighborhood, new representatives come to the House. And we're getting 11 new senators in the Senate this next year. That's a full third of them, right?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of new blood, and they have to start over. And that's, you know, the lobbyists, though, if you're a thorn in their side, or the bureaucrats, if you're a thorn in their side, they want you. Maybe they say, we want them to go away. But by the same token, they have spent, and I've not met a bad lobbyist. If I ask them, okay, who's opposing this or who's in support of this, they give me both sides so I can make up my mind. But they work a lot harder to build rapport with somebody so they know. So when I'm gone, some new person's coming, they have no idea what this person's like, and they don't know where they stand, and so. They know where I stand on any particular issue, or maybe they know that I don't stand on any particular, you know, try to educate me what that's going to be.
Before term limits, so representative, for a long time. Elected, nobody runs against him. The word I got was, well, the word is out that he sleeps a lot during the session, so we know he's not going to screw anything up.
Yep.
Terrible.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But back then, maybe you could get away with sleeping through things a little easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything you can think of you want to talk about that we haven't already? We've covered a lot of ground, buddy.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, my service has been predominantly the legislation I've been able to pass is centered around public safety. I did the very first bill that I got passed my very first year down there. I was one of two freshmen to get a bill passed. And it ended up being, it was House Bill 391. It had to deal with prescribed burning. We didn't define liability in our statutes, so those people who do that professionally couldn't get insurance.
I see.
Well, anyway, that ended up, once it left the House clean, it got over to the Senate and it got stuff piled onto it. It ended up being, they tell me, the largest conservation 1948.
Wow.
So I say that and telling you that I've been pretty successful.
Yeah.
If you want to, I've built relationships with everybody. And now that I'm going to be starting my senior year, I can go, I know the senators now, you see, I know them and call them or text them or go to their office. So it's been really good, but.
Well, thank you for your service and the time you put into it. We appreciate all of them. So I think I'm going to call this a wrap, buddy. There's a lot here for people to consume, and I keep thinking, well, it's just a little station, nobody listens to it. Yeah, I'll get stopped on the street and say, wow, we really enjoyed what that last program you did. So there's people listen. It's probably us old people, but we vote.
That's right. That's right. Well, look, if I have a last word, I would tell you that social media can be a great thing and it can be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to know me or want to talk to me, they're welcome to get a hold of me anytime. I will take time out of my day. So
this is proof.
No, I enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. So I really appreciate you thinking about me.
Well, it's kind of that season where I've been hitting some politicians and it's been enjoyable. And I've got a nephew running for representative.
Well, you should.
Oh, I will. Yeah, I will.
So, yeah, he came to me, whenever he first moved back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a year or two. He introduced himself, and so he and I have been in contact.
Yeah.
I had no idea that he...
Yeah.
So it came to a shock. You know, I knew he had aspired. He had been talking to me and wanted to learn about my position and he had aspirations of maybe running when I'm termed out. And it took me by surprise when it's not surprising that he would do that because he has the drive.
Mm-hmm. No, it's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
He'd like to be very involved.
That's good.
Government decision. Yeah.
From what I know of him. Mm-hmm. Don't know him real personally, but spend some time with him now.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Okay. Back to fence building for me.
I appreciate it.
You betcha.
Do you have a link to this? How does one?